This is the Feet in Two Worlds podcast.
We talk about like the right and the obligation of the immigrant.
These aren't just businesses. They're a very important part of the experience of being American and Chinese at the same time.
I just got told, well, I'm not going to go to college. They don't take immigrant people.
They were raised and taught that it's so taboo to be out. Here in the States, they are able to express it or show it.
Once they're inside, it's like they're transported back to Manila, to Philippines, in their own favorite Jollibee store.
Feet in Two Worlds, telling the stories of today's immigrants.
Here's a quick question. Becoming a U.S. citizen is a priority for most immigrants today. Yes or no? Now, don't answer too quickly because it's not that simple. I'm John Rudolph, executive producer of Feet in Two Worlds, a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School. When it comes to citizenship for today's immigrants, the ground is shifting. Many immigrants who could become citizens don't. Others say citizenship is less important for those who are undocumented compared to obtaining legal status that would protect them from being deported. In the studio with me to talk about this is Julissa Gutierrez. She's with the National Association of Latino Elected Officials, or NALEO. She's acting director of national programs and community relations at the NALEO Educational Fund. Julissa, welcome to Feet in Two Worlds.
Thank you so much, John.
And joining us from Washington, D.C. is Mark Lopez, director of Hispanic Research at the Pew Research Center. Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Mark, the Pew Hispanic Center released a poll at the end of 2013 that really caught my attention. About half of the Hispanics and Asians that you polled said that when it comes to undocumented immigrants, providing a pathway to citizenship is less important than being able to live and work in the U.S. legally without the threat of deportation. Were you as surprised by those results as I was?
Well, certainly a tension that there had been a lot of discussion about in the policy world, and we wanted to explore what Latinos and Asian Americans had to think about this. But I think there's a second part to this story that's worth noting as well. So we found this result that for Hispanics, particularly Asian Americans as well, many say that relief from deportation is more important than a pathway to citizenship. But that doesn't mean that there isn't support for a pathway to citizenship. The same survey showed that when you ask about should there be a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants, a vast majority of Latinos and a vast majority of Asian Americans, and actually a majority of the American public, do support that. But I think that these findings point to the situation that many Latinos see, particularly in their communities, around deportations and the number of deportations that are occurring during the last few years, particularly during the first Obama administration.
Well, I want to get to the reasons for this shift in attitudes. And would you say it is a shift, in fact, from previous eras?
Well, you know, we've never asked this particular question before, so I don't know if it is a shift in attitudes. But I do think that there has been a shift in attitudes among the general U.S. public when it comes to their views of immigrants. Having moved from immigrants are a burden to seeing immigrants today, Americans being split about seeing them as a strength or a burden. But we find that more Americans today than just a few years ago support a pathway to citizenship. So I think there's been a general movement towards the view that immigrants are good for the United States.
Julissa, in the survey that NALEO recently released, you found that over 80% of Latino permanent legal residents think that becoming a U.S. citizen is very important. But you also note in your study that there are 3.8 million people in this group who could become citizens but haven't even tried. What's going on here?
Correct. There are many who are eligible today but haven't taken that first step to naturalize, and that is the work that we're doing, that we're really trying to encourage and motivate them. The actual study that we did last year really looked at what were the factors, the motivating factors, and how can we encourage them to continue. So really kind of framing the work and the effective strategies that we can potentially continue to do and use with partners across the country. I think at the end of the day, the issue is that there needs to be a pathway to citizenship, and it's really kind of be the only way that we can really have an inclusive society. You know, NALEO's mission is to promote political participation. Without U.S. citizenship, you cannot have the right to vote, right? The full right to vote. You know, the barriers that were explained throughout the focus group and that we've also known is that it's, you know, not allowing folks to naturalize. I mean, there's over 8 million altogether besides just Latinos.
So you're saying there are more than 8 million people in the United States now who could apply for citizenship but haven't or don't.
Correct. And, you know, roughly about 650,000 do apply every year. You know, those rates and trends are increasing throughout the country every year. But there's the cost of $680 per the application. Folks have to demonstrate English proficiency, also demonstrate good moral character. And those are things that they come in. Oftentimes, immigrants coming into this country do not come with a full understanding of the law of the United States. They also come with experiences from their home country that may bar them as well. So these are things that, you know, it's a learning process. And to integrate them together, not only as legal permanent residents, but then eventually as U.S. citizens, it takes a longer time than usual, than expected, than somebody might think that they come here and then immediately apply. It doesn't work that way.
So the Naleo study was really designed to find out, not to reveal this number of people who could potentially become citizens, but to identify reasons why they don't go through the process of applying for citizenship.
Correct. Looking at the barriers, looking also at what were the motivating messages. And some of the motivating messages behind were, you know, the belief of, you know, seeking the right to vote. In addition, they can also, you know, access better opportunities for their children, greater educational opportunities.
These are messages that you are
correct
are advancing to try to convince people to become citizens.
Yeah, and also important to look at who are the messengers, right? Oftentimes in the Latino community, we are very much of a, you know, mixed community where we have multi-status family members living together. So there might be an undocumented with a LPR, a legal permanent resident, as well as a U.S. citizen. So, you know, this is it's a really much more complex process within the Latino immigrant family that I believe in which then we need to understand who can be those motivating factors. And actually, the most immediate family relatives are the best messengers for legal permanent residents.
Mark, I think a lot of people in this country assume that immigrants come here with the idea of eventually becoming citizens. But both your study and the Naleo study suggest that this actually isn't the case.
It's really interesting. And in fact, if you just take a look at patterns of naturalization among particularly Mexican immigrants, so these are Mexican immigrants who are in the country legally, we've been looking at and tracking this trend for some time. What percentage of them actually become U.S. citizens? Well, the share is hovering at around 36%. Now, that's significantly below all other immigrants. If you take a look, for example, at, say, Cuban immigrants, virtually 80% of them will naturalize among those who are legal permanent residents. And the same is true of, say, immigrants from India or immigrants from Europe. But immigrants from Mexico, who are a large segment of this legal permanent resident status group, many of them have legal status, are able to travel, able to work. There's relief from deportation for them, at least immediately, unless they commit some sort of a crime. But for the most part, they haven't made that additional step to become a U.S. citizen.
And why is that? Do you have a sense?
Yes. In one of our surveys that we did of Hispanic immigrants, in particular looking at Mexican immigrants, some of the reasons are, of course, the cost, that it's very costly to go through the process of going from being a legal permanent resident to becoming a U.S. citizen. It's almost $700, but you add legal fees onto that, it can be into the thousands of dollars. On top of that, there are language barriers, worries about not being able to speak English, and some have even said that, you know, they haven't tried yet or they're not interested. In fact, 26% in our survey of Hispanic immigrants who are legal permanent residents said that they hadn't tried yet or just weren't interested in becoming a U.S. citizen. I think it's important to note that legal permanent resident status does come with a number of benefits, which, of course, being able to work legally, they do have to pay taxes, they can travel, but it doesn't include the right to vote or the ability to hold, say, a federal job or never be deported, because once you become a U.S. citizen, you cannot be deported. So there's a number of benefits with that legal permanent resident status. There are additional benefits with the citizenship status, but getting to that legal status really has a number of big benefits associated with them. Of course, one of the most important are being able to work legally in the United States.
And just to add, oftentimes, some of the reasons that have been cited, and more anecdotally through our work on the ground, has been the reason why folks don't naturalize is because they don't want to lose, you know, a link to their country, right? Or in some countries, perhaps dual citizenship is not allowed, for example. And so they also have the dream of going back to their country. They come to this country with the belief of that they'll work, invest some time, and go back and invest and build that dream house back home.
Well, this is something I wanted to ask both of you about, because we're having this conversation as part of Feet into World's online magazine The theme is redefining the American dream. And I wonder if the fact that we have this now large number of immigrants in the U.S. who could become citizens but haven't is a reflection of a different idea about what it means to be an immigrant, that immigration is more of a transitional state than it is a permanent state like we used to see back in the 19th century and the early 20th century with Eastern European immigrants coming to the United States.
Yes, I think that it's possible that today's immigrants are different from those in the past, and that the nature of migration today is perhaps somewhat different. Now, in our surveys, we have found that Hispanic immigrants particularly say that some of the reasons why they come to the U.S. are for economic opportunities. That's the one of the main motivators, but also for a better life for their children. But we do live in a world today where it's much easier to travel back home, particularly for the immigrants who are coming from Latin America. It is easier to communicate and travel back home and maintain those relationships with home. And I do think that for today's immigrants, in many respects, yes, they've come to the U.S. to work, but they may be returning at some point back to their home countries, partly because it's so much easier to do today than it was, say, back in the early part of the 20th century.
What about the political climate in the United States? How much does the high number of deportations under the Obama administration and the impasse in Congress over immigration reform, how much are these weighing on people's decisions whether or not to seek citizenship if they are qualified to do so, and how much of it really feeds into the numbers that you found, Mark, that many immigrants say it's more important to be protected from deportation than it is to provide a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants?
Well, I would say that deportation environment right now and the lack of immigration reform may mostly be affecting those who are making a decision to come to the U.S. Without authorization. Now, we've certainly seen a decline in the number of people entering from Mexico, for example, but I think that this change in climate and the increased number of deportations coincides partly with the economic recession of a few years ago and the slow recovery, and those two may be important parts of the story why we've seen this slowdown in migration of undocumented immigrants to the United States. But contrast that with what we've seen on the legal side, that is, people who are trying to come to this country legally from all parts of the world. The number of immigrants living in the United States continues to grow, even as the number of undocumented immigrants in the United States has begun to fall. So since 2007, we've seen a decline in the number of undocumented immigrants in the U.S., but the number of immigrants overall, including legal and naturalized, has been rising to over 40 million now compared to, say, 11.7 million undocumented immigrants. The U.S. has more immigrants than anybody else in the world, and I think this really speaks to the attraction of the United States for a number of reasons, but I think it's important to note that these two trends are kind of going in opposite directions at the moment.
The question that you posed, John, we'll see in the coming months, right, with the midterm elections. Right now, we have some primaries underway, and also the role that the Dreamers can play. Although they do not have the right to vote, there's millions of them who are organizing and have successfully organized right now. You know, we want to make sure that deferred action.
And we should just say the Dreamers are young, undocumented immigrants who have been pushing for a pathway to citizenship.
Correct. And currently, they do have the opportunity, if they can provide evidence and good moral character, et cetera, to apply for deferred action under the president's executive order. I think they're an important segment to highlight because they are helping to augment, you know, the conversation around, you know, helping to potentially be a motivating factor for those who are eligible to vote and getting them, because if they cannot vote themselves, they're asking their family members and their friends to please go out and become a U.S. citizen and be the voice and, you know, be able to turn that ballot if they can't do it themselves. So that's kind of really important. We have seen some successes in that regard.
But couldn't you also flip that thing on its head and say, the Dreamers have been actually very effective in bringing the issue of immigration reform to the country as a whole and for advocating for the rights for undocumented immigrants. And somebody could say, look what they've done. They can't vote, but look how effective they've been. So why do you even need to have the right to vote? You can do it in other ways.
Well, at the end of the day, the Dreamers are also here to stay. They're not really going to go back to their country. They have invested majority of their lives here in the country. And they have been contributing as well. We all know that unauthorized immigrants, as well as legal permanent residents and Dreamers, including, are contributing to the economy of this country. And so for the next step, in order for us to ensure that we have a more vibrant and stronger economy, it's just the best thing to do is to provide a pathway to citizenship for all and not to have a second-class citizenry.
Mark, one of the things that came out in your study were mixed feelings on the part of the Latinos and Asians that you surveyed about providing citizenship to undocumented immigrants. And I wonder if you could talk about that a little bit, because it's interesting to see the parallels between those mixed feelings and the mixed feelings that we hear about all the time among native-born Americans who talk about what would happen if 11 million and some odd undocumented immigrants were given a pathway to citizenship.
So in our survey, we had wanted to explore a number of different things, including views of citizenship among Asian Americans, and Hispanics. And we had found that, you know, for Hispanics particularly, there's strong support for a pathway to citizenship for the undocumented. But it's interesting that for Asian Americans, while there are many undocumented Asian immigrants as well, the issues around deportation, the issues around even interacting with the U.S. immigration system, it's a very different experience that Asian immigrants have had compared to, say, Hispanic immigrants. And Asian immigrants and Asian Americans don't always have the same views of issues around deportation or pathway to citizenship that Hispanics do. But I do think it's important to note that in some ways we did find some similarities, particularly on this relief from deportation versus a pathway to citizenship, and also support for a pathway to citizenship for the undocumented. But I think it's also interesting to note that, you know, many Asian Americans don't worry that somebody that they know may be deported, but Hispanics, particularly Hispanic immigrants, are worried. More than half of them will say that they're worried that somebody they know or even they themselves could be deported in the next year.
And that would be a reflection of differences between the structure of Asian immigrant communities and Latino immigrant communities, correct?
That's exactly right. Hispanics are more likely to be undocumented. So, for example, among the 11.7 million undocumented immigrants in the country, 8 million are Hispanic, and in fact, 6 million are from Mexico alone. So Mexicans make up more than half of all undocumented immigrants. But there's about at least a million plus Asian immigrants who are in the country illegally. But many Asian immigrants who come to the U.S. are usually on, say, an H-1B visa, or they may be a refugee from some part of Southeast Asia, for example. So there are a number of differences that distinguish the Asian immigrant experience from the Hispanic immigrant experience.
So the big question that I keep coming back to in my own thinking about this is, what are the implications for American society and American politics if you have this large group? And we have currently over 8 million people who are legal but not citizens, and then another group of 11.5 or so million who are undocumented. They're not legal or citizens. What are the long-term implications for the society if this group never really moves into the pathway to citizenship? Jalissa?
Well, then we won't have a stake in our own future, unfortunately. And that is what exactly we don't want. And
I got to stop you, because is that really true? Because, for example, in the last two presidential elections, we've heard a lot about how Latinos were the key vote that led to President Obama's victory. Mm-hmm. So clearly there are a lot of Latinos who are voting, and they have staked their claim in the country's future.
Correct. But, you know, it's important to say that's also was a presidential election, right? And that gets the most spotlight, the most attention, the most media play, and also voter contact for those who are eligible to vote. And at the local level is where the more immediate kind of experiences where, you know, you can feel the anti-immigrant climate, There are, you know, restrictive practices going on. ICE, you know, is going, you know, secure communities at a local level where families are being, you know, torn apart. And in order to change those things, you know, it's important to have access to perhaps non-citizen voting or eventually, obviously, U.S. citizenship benefits of voting. It wouldn't be the democracy that we really envision at the founding of this country. And a little by little, I think also, you know, with the rise of more of elected officials who represent and look like those who they're representing in their districts, you know, you'll have a better understanding of what the real issues are or opportunities that can provide, you know, for these immigrants that are coming every day.
Mark, what is your sense of the political implications of this large group of people in the country, but not who are not citizens?
Well, I think it really speaks to, particularly on the Latino side of this, that the Latino vote, well, reaching record numbers of voters in recent election cycles, both midterms and presidentials, continues to, as a colleague of mine likes to say, punch below its weight. And it punches below its weight because Latinos, while a growing share of the U.S. electorate, represent a smaller share of the electorate than they do of the general U.S. population. Now, I do think there's a couple of interesting things happening as well, though. Many undocumented immigrants, for example, have been in the country for 10-plus years. In fact, their time in the country is growing, and many of them have had children born here in the U.S. So it's about 4.5 million U.S.-born children of undocumented parents.
And those children are all U.S. citizens.
They're U.S. citizens, and they are in the Latino population starting to come of age. So the native-born or the U.S.-born Hispanic will be a bigger part of the adult population and a bigger part of the electorate. So while right now many undocumented immigrants or illegal permanent residents in the Hispanic community can't vote because they're not U.S. citizens, for the most part, their children are going to really reshape the U.S. electorate in the coming decades. And in fact, it's already starting. Latino youth are much more likely to be native-born, for example, than their adult counterparts. And we're seeing the share of foreign-born among Hispanics fall.
And how much do you think those demographic changes that you've described are weighing on the current, well, we can't call it a debate, but the conversation in Washington about immigration reform on both sides? I mean, what is it going to mean for the future of the Republican or Democratic parties?
Well, I certainly think in Washington there is a discussion about the nation's changing demographics and the implication that has for the Democratic Party and the implications it has for the Republican Party, and also a number of policy questions, with immigration reform being one of them, but also social safety net, Social Security, et cetera, as well. But I don't think it's quite become as central to the debate as one might expect yet. Maybe in a couple of presidential election cycles, that might be a different story. But it's still something that people are starting to talk about. There's been a lot of discussion about particularly what implications the changing demographics have for the Republican Party. But I don't know if it's necessarily yet played out in terms of shaping policy for the future generations of the country.
No, I agree. And, you know, this rising American electorate that Mark is alluding to is, something that you're seeing a lot more also in emerging immigrant communities in the South, for example, in North Carolina. And there you do see also the rise of more immigrant leaders coming to the table and running for office. And so little by little with time, like Mark said, we will see the effects of, you know, the naturalization trends really impacting the opportunities for folks to, you know, position themselves for positions of power, and then ultimately being able to really reflect perhaps the communities that they are a part of and also are, you know, fulfilling that sort of American dream that we all come for.
And Jalissa, we're in a midterm election year. We're not hearing that much about this citizenship issue yet, but I wonder, in the next presidential cycle, are you imagining that this is going to be an issue that's going to be in the forefront?
Yes, of course. It's something that is, you know, every day actively more legal permanent residents come to this country. Again, over 1 million of them, USCIS grants them legal permanent residency every year. So it's an opportunity for folks to really engage and recognize their potential power, you know, not only in the midterms, but in the next cycle in 2016 is going to be really big. And then 2020 as well, we're going to see who will be really kind of the contenders. I feel like this has been the dialogue since 2008. The prom queen is the Latino electorate that everybody wants to dance with. But of course, there's a lot of work to be done in every community, and we just need to support those efforts.
Julissa Gutierrez is the Acting Director of National Programs and Community Relations at the Naleo Educational Fund. Mark Lopez is Director of Hispanic Research at the Pew Research Center in Washington, D.C. Thank you both for being on the Feet in Two Worlds podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our producer is Jocelyn Gonzalez. The engineer is Paul Ruest at Argo Studios. This podcast is a feature of the Feet in Two Worlds online magazine, Redefining the American Dream. You can see the rest of the stories at our website, fi2w.org. I'm John Rudolph. Thanks for listening.
Feet in Two Worlds is supported by the David and Catherine Moore Family Foundation, the Ralph E. Ogden Foundation, and listeners and readers like you. Join our growing group of supporters. Go to our website, fi2w.org, and click on the support tab in the upper right-hand corner. Feet in Two Worlds, supporting immigrant journalists and bringing their stories to the rest of America. We're a project of the Center for New York City Affairs at the New School.